You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Chat on MMAfighting.com. I am, of course, your host, Jose Youngs. So if you hear weird noises in the background, it's because I'm back in Rhode Island sitting outside. So we got ocean, we got boats going by, we got someone cutting grass like two blocks over. So if you hear any weird noise, that's probably on my end, but no one cares about me. We're here to talk about the man. Well, when I say this, when he's about to fight, I know he's about to fight because my Twitter mentions blow up. And when he wins, my DM starts to blow up because they're all asking me, is he going to be on the next show? So the answer is yes. Joining us this week is Brian Keller. You know him. He's one of the original guests of the show. Brian, what is up?
Boom, baby. What's going on? How's everything?
Well, you're about the richest man we know right now, as Casey said. You got another $50,000 third time this year. So what's life like? Another 50K richer.
Oh, you know, still living in my parents' house, but we're making our way out. We're in the process. Actually, I am house shopping, so that's a good thing. So waiting for that to come through probably towards the end of the year. But things are going good. Couldn't be better. Got the tiger's eye on the neck here.
There you go.
Fortune is for me.
You're in Long Island, right?
Yeah, Long Island, New York.
Is Ally Quinta gonna be a real estate agent?
That's what everyone's saying. Everyone's hitting me up on Twitter. They're like, hit up Ally Quinta, this and that. I'm like, yeah, that's not a bad idea, actually. But I have a friend that's a real estate agent, so I just used him because I know him pretty well. But yeah, Al's not a bad backup for sure.
Hey, I was gonna say Al Jermaine's, but he's in your weight class, so he'll give you a shitty deal. No, so don't talk to him.
he might take an extra percentage on the back end or something behind my back.
Well, Casey, what's like life in the Englewood on fire? Englewood's not on fire, is it?
Englewood's not on fire, but it is bad. I think on Monday or Tuesday. No, wait, today's Wednesday, so Monday it was world record high temperature in LA County. It hit 121 degrees out in the valley. And that's about maybe like 10 miles from me. But in Inglewood, it hit almost 100 degrees, which is incredibly hot. And almost no homes here have any AC because when they built these, it wasn't 100 degrees, you know, in the summer. So it sucks. And we had rolling blackouts and, a lot of crappy stuff. And all the fires, when I woke up, I think Monday morning, everything outside our cars was all covered in ash.
Ashes to ashes.
Yeah.
Jesus. We get up to 120 in the summer. I don't think I've ever experienced, wildfire like that before.
So the air is horrible. It's super hot and everything, but hey, I'm here. I'm with you two handsome gentlemen. This is great.
Thank you. I feel like if Joe Rogan leaves, everybody has to leave, right?
Right. He left, right? I hear he's going to Texas or something.
Yeah, he went to Texas. Yeah, I'm from Texas, and I would love to move back to Texas at some point, but weed is still illegal there. And I just cannot accept that. I can't do the whole meeting some random dude in an apartment parking lot complex, you know? So, yeah. The whole Pineapple Express thing, you know, you go to some random dude's place and you just got to sit in his apartment and just kind of chill and talk about nothing.
And then they question if you're a narc and what have you. But anyway, no one wants to talk about that. Actually, they probably do want to talk about that. But you can ask any question you want on Twitter, the site, the YouTube comments, Casey's Man, and the ones and twos. Brian is one of the host guests that will talk about whatever you want to talk about. So weird, non-weird, MMA, non-MMA related, let's talk about it. So, Casey, what is our first question?
Let's get crazy.
Yeah, right.
There we go. First question.
From Smokey Medford, speaking of smoke, DC at heavyweight. We all know if it's not broken, don't fix it. So why do you think DC came in so light in the last two fights with Miocic? He had his best success at heavyweight when he was on the heavier side. He landed many of the same punches as the first fight. With the extra weight to his punches, do you think he would have KO'd Miocic again? Brian, interesting question, because you fought in a weight class above your natural weight. I'm not saying Daniel Cormier is a natural light heavyweight, but he's knocked out heavyweights coming in heavier, and then when he came in lighter, he didn't have the same power. So I'll use this as a two-part question. We can answer the question about Daniel Cormier specifically, but B, how's your power translate moving up a weight class?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel a little bit of a power difference. Also, just being able to absorb shots better as well, going up a weight class, just being healthier, less weight cut. But I think I'm pretty sure Cormier like actually cut a little bit of weight for like the weigh-in, yeah, which is weird at heavyweight. It's almost like a ego thing. Like, oh, I want to just look like I'm in better shape than I'm actually in, and then come in the next night heavier and like hike your pants up all the way and just like say F it. I don't know, but you know, at heavyweight in general, DC definitely has more power than light heavyweight. I feel he's obviously done better at heavyweight, but yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure why he actually cuts that weight before the fight.
And maybe it's just Stipe said it best. He hit him with that perfect punch one time, and he never was able. Because like, if you watch the third fight, I think Casey, you asked the question. Yeah. Like you asked Stipe that question. He hit that same punch a dozen times. Okay. And he got dropped once in the first fight and didn't get dropped at all in the third fight. So maybe it's just that one time. Brian, I'm sure you've experienced it. You just get caught cold sometimes.
Yeah, and it's also like when you don't expect it, when you don't see the punch coming. And I think in that last fight, he kind of expected that same thing, and he was more aware of it.
Yeah, I think that's what Stipe said. It's that punch you don't expect. That's the one that gets you. Like, you guys are tough mofos. I mean, like, I can punch you as hard as I can. But if you know it's coming, you know, you'll brace up, you know, it'll suck, but, you know, you're ready though. But those little punches, you know, just those are the ones that really mess you up, right, Brian?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like in sparring too, like you learn that as you go. Like when you see punches, even if they feel heavy, but you saw it coming, you can embrace it better and absorb it better. But like when someone throws just a lazy little hook, but you didn't see it, it kind of like gets you off guard. And you're like, whoa, like where'd that come from?
Yeah, it always seems to be those weak looking, like the Mike Russell punch on Todd Duffy when he just kind of bonked them and then he just passed out. Like, it's those punches that you notice not drop most people.
You know, yeah, also like where it hits on your face, you know. Mm-hmm.
What's the light? Just kind of going back in your fight memories, either your own experiences or from fights you've watched. What's like the lightest punch you've seen that just completely it looks light, but a punch like super light, but look, it just knocked the guy out. You know, the one I go to is before you, while you think about it, I always think of Nick Diaz versus Robbie Lawler, even though because that punch was just that little.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Obviously, it was like right in the chin, but it didn't look like very much. It looked like Robbie could take 50 of those, but for some reason, that punch just knocked him out cold.
It looked like one of those signature slap punches that you and I always talk about.
Yeah, all their punches kind of look weird. It's like they drown you with volume, but they don't really look hard, you know, the Diaz brothers. But
yeah,
the opposite is Ngannou. His punch always looks heavy as hell. But I'm trying to think of anyone else that throws like a light-looking punch that knocks someone out. I don't know.
Yeah, Bader's too. When Bader knocked out King Mo and Fedor, they obviously are hard because they're at heavyweight and he gets them perfectly. They don't look that powerful. I think it's because he kind of, he like times it. So they're moving forward and then he stopped and he plants and he like they're the two momentums clash, but they don't look like the hardest punch.
And he fakes it. They look like takedowns too. So the guys are thinking low.
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
so they're going. Yeah, they're going down to catch them on the temple.
Yeah, I have got hit with a punch. Like besides the Lineker fight, like I haven't been rocked really in fights besides earlier on in my career by like a 145er that I fought, you know, before the UFC and everything. And it was weird. It was like it didn't even hit me in a bad spot, but it like threw my equilibrium off for like maybe 5-10 seconds. I had to move around the cage and like recover. But like I was worried that he saw that I was hurt, so I was trying to like stay away from him for a little bit. It was the weirdest thing. It wasn't a hard punch at all.
Casey, is there any difference between getting rocked from a head kick and getting rocked from a punch?
Head kicks are surprising because they don't have to hit you very hard. Like they barely have to touch you, and like it's kind of shocking how much it will rock you. Just because like, if it's like what was the? I think it was. Oh, you know another kick, JDS versus Mark Hunt, when it kind of grazed the top of his head.
It doesn't snap a little.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that much, but then if you in sparring or in a real fight, if anything just touches here and above, it just wobbles the hell out of you, like to the point like you don't even like other day I was sparring and like I got wobbled bad. And I didn't know I was wobbling. And the coach had to stop the round. Like, all right, Casey, you're going to sit out the rest of the day. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you've been wobbling. I'm like, really?
You don't even know.
Yeah, I'm like oh, I thought I was doing great. Shit. All right. I guess you're right.
That Mark Hunt kick specifically, if you watch that whole fight, he blocks a lot of the punches leading up to that with the top of his head. Like instead of putting his hands up, he'll just put his head down. So yeah. JDS is punching the top of his head the whole fight. And then when he got that spin kick to that same spot, I think just enough was enough.
Like that's the best spot to get hit, like right in the forehead. It doesn't really do much to you, especially straight on. Mm-hmm. But like the head kicks, like you're saying, sometimes they catch the top of the head, but they like snap your neck. Like they give you like a whiplash. Mm-hmm. I feel like that kind of gets guys like wobbled.
Have you ever had you ever got hit with a shot like the next day you can't turn your head, Brian?
No, but I had an injury like from wrestling from that where I shot into a takedown and my neck got jammed up from a sprawl. And that had me all out of sorts for like a couple of weeks. My neck was stiff. Like it's the worst feeling too when like your neck you can't turn, you know?
And all of a sudden, like when you
get I'm pretty sure Tatiana Suarez still hasn't recovered from like jamming her neck.
Yeah, Suarez, right? She's still out?
Yeah, there was a neck injury because her blast double leg takedowns is like her bread and butter, but she can't hit him because her neck's all jammed up.
Yeah, your neck is so sensitive. You know what I mean? Like it's always being compromised. Jiu-jitsu, wrestling, even sparring. Like after I hurt my neck, I thought I was good. I went back and I would spar. And just if I got punched and my neck kind of whipped a little, it would re-pinch the nerve. And I'd feel like that numbness down my arm, that was like bothering me for months.
Stay in school, kids.
Yeah. Don't chase your dreams.
Don't chase.
It's not worth it. Yeah. You can have dreams, but go for like the third or fourth one. The top ones, yeah, you know. Wait, before we go next
question. Just don't pick fighting if you want to be an athlete.
Oh, man.
What were you saying, Casey?
Oh, well, no. No, yeah, don't pick fighting. I think all you guys are freaking insane for trying to do this as a professional career. But... Hey, good, but Brian's had a great 2020, so yeah, so everyone,
we don't have a choice, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Fighting chose
we know
you.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
All right, what is our next question?
Real quick, before we move to the next question, I want to ask Brian this. I always hear all the time in commentary that if you land your hardest punch on a guy that, you know, normally it hurts him, it drops him, and it doesn't do anything, does that really affect your confidence? Brian, like if you land like the hardest overhand, the hardest hook is like, oh, that should have dropped him. He just kind of like whatever. Is it? Are you thinking in your head? Yeah. Oh, I just got landed again, or like, oh, I need a plan B because it's like he ain't going down.
Yeah, that's something you face in fights sometimes, and you have to be strong enough to be like, you know what, I'm unfazed by that. I'm just gonna keep on hitting him, keep on trying to finish him, and whatever happens, happens. You know, the worst comes to worst, you might win a decision, but you can't let something like that. Kind of demoralize you and make you start to fight differently. But that if that happened any fight ever that I've had, it was the Lineker fight, was like anything I hit him with, that I felt would have hurt somebody else just didn't faze him at all. And I was like, what do I got to do to this guy? You know, like, oh my God, he just keeps coming forward with these bombs. Like, they never feel less powerful as the fight goes on. So I was like, I hit him with a couple of shots in that fight. When I watched the replay, I'm like, man, that would have put a lot of guys down, you know, but he's just made out of something else. It was wild.
What did you learn? John
Lineker is a lovely human.
Brian, I get now, like, with that Lineker fight had to be like, what, 3 years ago now, 2 years ago? Like,
yep. Never forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. What, like, now, like, you know, there's been a significant gap of time now, you know, your career is definitely rebounding from that loss. What do you think you really learned from that fight now, a couple years later?
Well, that fight definitely hit me, you know, psychologically for a while. I had to kind of accept that, and first time that ever happened to me, and you know, kind of feeling that invincible feeling before that, and then realizing the vulnerabilities of fighting, but then also kind of regathering my confidence and making sure that I focus on the right things, you know, that I don't overthink that could happen or go into fights with that fear of that happening, because it's just, there's no room for that in the sport. So I kind of just got my confidence back with, you know, experience in the gym, sparring, you know, getting hit again and making sure I'm good with that. And it just built from there, the consistency, and then, you know, kind of traveled into my fights where I just forgot about it pretty much. And I went in with, you know, the objective to just kill, you know, and not really overthink those kind of things.
That was in Brazil too, right?
Yeah, Brazil.
Oh my God! So what's it like? What's it like getting knocked out?
Well, I know Brazil because I remember I interviewed Brian. You showed me you had your boom necklace and everything. I think
I had the big boom one. I'm trying to lose that necklace, by the way. I just insured it, so no. Yeah, I spent way too much money on that damn thing. I remember that. Yeah, in Brazil, I got dressed up. It was like my first media day. I was all happy and stuff. And you have this vision that you're just gonna go upward, you know, like to the top. And that's another thing you got to face with that kind of defeat. Like, oh, like sometimes you get reset and you have to restart and go on a winning streak and get back to where you thought you were going to get, you know. It just doesn't happen perfect all the time, smooth, you know, rise to the top. So I'm glad I am where I am now looking back on that.
Sorry, Jose, I interrupted your question. What were you going to ask?
I don't even remember. I was probably going to say, I don't even remember. Well, do you have the most fights in 2020 right now, Brian? In the UFC?
I think I'm up there. Definitely tied for it, I think, with four. I think Angela Hill has a lot, has four or five maybe. That's now. I think
maybe coming up, maybe after she fights.
There's a couple of people.
Well, yeah, when did Angela fall in Jacksonville with you? And did she fight before that too? Did she fight in January, February, March, Casey?
I don't know.
That was the Claudia fight, I thought. Yeah.
That was Jacksonville. That was May. I don't remember. Well, he definitely has the most bonuses. That's all that's important. Yeah. Anyway, what's
time
our next
for the
question?
Most wins.
There you go. So before we go on, you signed a new contract in January, right? After your win. So are you done? Do you have one more now already?
I technically I have one more left on the deal, but I'm at the point where you would sign the next deal.
Well, I would have to assume the UFC wants to keep you around.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think I'm becoming a fan favorite and like a, you know, a veteran and a mainstay. But like, I'm always tempted to fight out my contract just to really see where my worth is and become a free agent. Like I know Eddie Alvarez always talks about, but it seems like management never wants to do that. Like they're never on that page. They're like, no, trust me. Let's re-sign. Let's get locked in. And it's the safest bet. And I'm like, all right, like I don't know.
Do you talk to other fighters about that? Like, I know Eddie and Rory and everyone, they want it all test free agency too.
Yeah, I haven't really like made a roundabout and like really asked a lot of high level guys that have dealt with that. But most of the time, I feel like guys just re-sign because that fear of like putting yourself in a position of maybe losing that last fight, you know? And then you're like, well, what do I do now? Because now they can cut me and I'm probably not going to get offered a big payday outside the company because, you know, you got to be on a hot streak and then maybe Bellator will come in and offer like a big, you know, a big payday and then the UFC can match it and you find out your real worth.
Interesting. The more you know.
That's nerve-wracking, man. I can't.
I know.
Like betting so much on yourself. I mean I don't think there's an equivalent to that for anyone else with any sort of normal job. That'd be like, hey Casey, based on your interviews on next week's A side, that's going to decide your livelihood for the next 3 years. I don't know.
The only thing I can think of is like in the NFL when they have the franchise tag where you get stuck, you get slapped with that. So you're locked in for 1 year. And a lot of players just refuse to play. Like you saw that with Le'Veon Bell before he went to the Jets. They get, as you know, how the franchise tag works, Casey?
A little bit.
You're locked in for the average of your position or like the above average of your position. And so basically a 1 year deal. And then it's basically to keep you, and then they can keep franchising you. Or I don't think it's like unlimited, but like they did that to Le'Veon Bell. And he's just like, I'm not playing then. Like I'm a running back in the prime of my career. What if I blow my knee out next year when I'm franchised and then all of a sudden I can't get a new contract? So a lot of players would just sit out.
Cool.
Anyway, thank you for the question, Smokey Medford.
Okay, this really this is a comment, but I want to get Brian's opinion on this comment. Hold on one moment.
From Giandra Thapa, goes to show you how good TJ is, the way he dismantled Lineker was so good. So I assume they're implying that TJ like absolutely tore through John Lineker. I think I can't remember what UFC 207, I want to say. It was the same fight card as Cody and Dominic Cruz, maybe. But so what are your thoughts on that, Brian?
Yeah, no, I think it's true. TJ's a really highly technical fighter. You know, he really did. He broke him down. He definitely utilized timing on his shots to take Lineker down and stay on top on the ground and utilize ground and pound really well in positions. And that was kind of like somewhat of the plan, but like you fall in love with striking a little bit and you think like you could take anybody out and you get in that exchange in the fight and you're having fun and you're going back and forth. You kind of forget about those details, you know, but TJ stuck to the game plan in that fight, and yeah, he executed perfectly.
That's the fight that Chael Sonnen always points to when he's talking about like the best fighter he ever saw. He's like, TJ Shaw against John Lineker was one of the best fighters I've ever seen, because he just, like you said, put together a perfect game plan. Do you fall in love with, not to fall in love with striking in a fight? Because like I interviewed DC after his loss to Stipe, and he said that Stipe, his face gets marked up so easily. Like you could just like scrape him and it turns purple. That he would touch him with light punches and he was leaving so many bruises that he just stuck with the striking. And I was at that fight and Bob Cook was screaming at him to get the takedown and DC was not listening just because he fell in love with the striking.
Oh yeah, it definitely happens. I mean, you start tagging a guy a little bit, you start having success, and especially if you're coming off a fight where you've knocked someone out, stuff like that, you know the feeling of it, and you're like, oh, I have that kind of power, like I'm gonna do that to this guy too. And then, you know, some guys don't get affected by these punches. Sometimes you don't land that punch, so you have to have that durability and that adaptation to be able to recognize and be like, okay, let me switch things up here. Like there's other ways to win. For me, like I'm pretty well rounded with finishes, you know, with TKOs, knockouts, and then submissions. So I'm like, I'm happy with the way that I adjust, and I'm able to, you know, latch onto a neck like last time if I have to, you know.
Bang, boom,
boom, teens.
Do you, Brian? Actually, I don't know if we're gonna get any direct questions on it, but I want to ask you let's talk about your fight. Just actually your fight last Saturday. What was like, I don't know, like when you're training for a guy who was your original opponent? Yeah, Ricky Simone.
Ricky Simone. Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're training,
Says he ran away.
Are you visualizing your opponent's face, and then all of a sudden, when you walk into the cage, like I don't know who this person is, or like what is that like for you? Like, because you have, I'm assuming you had no idea who your opponent was.
Yeah, it was weird, man. Especially because like first it was Rick Simone, and I'm preparing for his style, and you know he's a really hard guy to fight. You know, he's well rounded and he brings a high pace. So I'm like, man, I'm about to get into a war here, for sure. And then you know they change it to the Kevin guy, and I watched a little bit of him, but I don't like to even really watch my opponents that much. I kind of leave it up to my coaches. So when he got pulled, I'm like, all right. I have no idea what's going on. Like, I don't know who I'm fighting. I faced off with one guy. I fought a different guy. So it was pretty crazy. And I was kind of like trying to just keep my mindset focused and not worry about those extra things. You know, you could overthink really easily and kind of paralyze yourself with thoughts. But it was weird, you know, walking out to my fight. I just felt real nervous, like the unknown, you know, like not really knowing anything about this guy. What does he bring to the table? You know, everyone's expecting me to beat him. Don't underestimate him. So all of that going into the fight, it was pretty crazy.
What's it like fighting in this climate where, like, I joke about it when we do preview stuff, preview shows and everything, where I don't consider a fight official until you're in the octagon. Because, like you said, you stare down with a guy and didn't even fight him. And then, like, you saw what happened with Kevin Holland and Trevin Giles, where Trevin Giles, he was getting ready to walk and he passed out. And then Kevin found out he was waiting to walk out. And then he looks up at the monitor and he goes, oh, I guess my fight's canceled. So what's it like knowing that you could sign a contract and you go, I don't think you're going to fight a guy until you're actually in there.
Oh, it's true, man. The unknowns are always there in the back of your mind. Like, well, what if this, what if that, you know, the COVID thing and everything. Like, you just never know when a positive test is going to come up and whatnot. And that happened, I think, to the Kevin, not TV Dodd. And then it was supposedly negative, but they didn't want to risk it. The commission found out. So there's just so many different things right now that can change things up. And to be honest with you, though, it couldn't have been any better for me. Like, I got to fight. I got to, you know, get paid, get a bonus. You know, I'm thankful that the guy Ray Rodriguez stepped up on a day's notice, because even for him to have to step up on a day's notice to fight me, I think is a hard thing. You know, he must have been nervous too about that.
Yeah, we think Kevin Natvidad and Ray Rodriguez should fight next. That's what we decided.
Yeah, I thought that was perfect. Yeah,
I'll give them both another shot. But thank you for the comment, Giandra Thapa. Apologize if I mispronounce your name.
All right, here we next.
And you, Ricky Simone fight's the one you want next, I would imagine. Just rebook it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a good idea. I think they'll look to do that. I'm sure he still wants to fight me, he said. So I'm all about that fight. I think that's a fan favorite fight, too. Like, a lot of people were hype about that fight.
Yeah, I think that fight rules.
More bonuses.
From Max L. Kukui Holloway, does Kelleher smoke weed the night after the fight?
You know, in Vegas, we had a little bit of fun after the fight. Yeah, my corners had it all set up for me for a celebration, so it was kind of nice. But yeah, we'll just say yeah.
Just say yeah, leave it at that.
I'm not really a drinker, so like I don't really drink after the fight. Like I'd prefer to smoke than drink. That's just me. But yeah, and we're in Vegas, so it's easily accessible. So I'm like, yeah, why not? My corners, they smoke, you know, that like they enjoy weed, so they're like, yeah, we'll have something ready for you after the victory. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, don't accept any fights in Abu Dhabi.
Brian, that's against everything there, right?
Yeah. You might be stuck there for a long time if you don't obey the rules. Did you see those tweets and comments from who are those two fighters that got popped for weed? Luis Pena,
Jaron Wynn.
Jaron Wynn was amphetamine. Jaron Wynn was something else, right.
It was fighters, Pena and Tim Elliott.
That was it. And both of them said it was actually, I think they did dabs or something.
Yeah.
Oh, and Jamal Hill.
Jamal Hill. And essentially they said like they didn't do it anywhere near the actual fight, but they said like from dabs or something from like weeks before still stayed in their system, which is incredibly messed up that they're punished for that. But are you aware of that? I'm just giving you a heads up. This is more of just like, just watch your back.
I saw that, and I always feel bad for those guys, you know, because everyone knows how weed works. It's not affecting them 2 weeks later in the fight, you know, so it's kind of a weird thing with the whole CBD being fine as well. But yeah, I don't dab myself. I'm like afraid of weed, even though I enjoy it. I'm like, I don't want to get too high, so I'm like a flower guy and like take a little, like one hit here and there, you know. But like the dabs are on another level, so I guess the potency of it backfired on them on the test, because there's like a threshold. Like, I don't know how you go over that threshold, but
yeah, it's just yeah, they're clearly not stoned at all, but yeah, it's just
right.
I just wonder if you're aware of that. So it's kind of messed up.
I've always wanted to ask the Diaz brothers though, like, have you smoked and like went into a fight high? Just tell the truth. Come on,
wasn't it the Gomi fight when Diaz had Gomi? Like, that was like his levels were so off the charts that. And then, like, if you watch all of his post-fight press conferences, he has sunglasses on the whole time. Yeah. And, like, when he wants to talk, he's like shuffling around and his glasses are on. And I think that was the one that sticks out to me the most. And he tapped a go-go platter that ended up being, like, a no contest or something crazy like that. That,
because,
to me...
Because of the weed, yeah.
Stories I've ever heard. It's like the most insane submission with the weirdest conclusion. But anyway, I hope that answered the question.
All right. Next to me. Where is that question? I saw it. Here we are.
From Tristan Gordet. What do you think about what Dana had to say about the double booking of Khachmat Chimaev after last night Contender Series episode was completed? So, for those of you who aren't aware, for whatever reason, the UFC has booked Khachmat Chimaev against Gerald Meerschaert, I think, on the September 19th card, as someone starts weed whacking again across the street. So they booked him against Gerald Meerschaert, which is a middleweight fight, and then apparently they're also booking him against Damian Maia in a welterweight fight on Fight Island. That's the plan as of now. I'm sure you've seen Gerald Meerschaert's doing all the interviews across all the medias. I think he might have an interview on our site coming too. He feels disrespected. He wants to play the spoiler. But Brian, as a fighter, what would you say if the UFC booked an opponent for your opponent before you guys even fought?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of disrespectful, you know. You're like, all right, I guess you guys are writing me off already before the fight happens. But I think that'll light a fire under Jared Meerschaert. You know, he's gonna want to win even more now, knowing that, because if you see that happening with your opponent and you can take that guy out, like, you're just gonna steal all the hype yourself, and maybe they'll start double booking you after that, you know, because this is kind of like unprecedented. Like, they don't really double book guys like and hype guys like this, where they're like, I'm giving them fights every week, like, I want to give this guy fights everywhere. I'm like, hey, look at me. I'm trying to do the same thing. So, you know.
One of them is get the September 19th card in Vegas. And then the next one's on Fight Island, two different weight classes.
Yeah.
And enough, Damian Maia will be, I think, his first real welterweight, because he fought a middleweight on short notice on Fight Island. Then he got a turnaround fight against Reese McKee, who I think is a lightweight. He was just a blown up lightweight. I think his next fight he'll drop back to 155. So, but what do you think? Because this is also going to be possibly be Damian Maia's last fight.
Yeah.
Do you think it's fair that it's against Chimaev, or would you like to see someone like Damian Maia go out with maybe a bigger name or a more veteran name?
Well, I mean, for him, yeah, it would be nice to see that, you know, a veteran versus a veteran, something a little more fair, a little bit more, you know, to do. But I feel like for the UFC, they're kind of doing it for them. You know, they know, well, let's build a little, you know, let's build Chimaev recognition off of Maia. If he beats someone like that, especially with his ground game, you know, we kind of want to see how good this guy really is. So they're kind of giving him that opportunity to show that, like, hey, look, this is how good he is. Look at, he took out Maia. Not a lot of people do that. So I think that's how they're looking at it. But I am interested to see, like, if this fight goes to the ground, like, how is this guy going to look? We'll kind of get a good grip on how good he is.
Let's also not forget that Gerald Meerschaert has like 20 plus submission wins, not just total wins, like submission wins. He's unbelievable on the ground. He has the win over Duran Win, played spoiler for that hype train too. So yeah, I'm super hyped for that. I like both fights as fights. I think Damian Maia should take one more after that, win or lose. I don't want to see him, unless he just steamrolls over Chimaev and he's never going to have a better performance like Ricardo Lamas just did when he called it a career. But I know Maia really wants to fight Diego Sanchez. So if he wants to fight Diego, why not?
Crack the coconut.
There you go. There you go. Thanks for the question, Tristan Gordet. So you booked sometime, right, Brian? You like that idea?
You
would want to be double booked?
I mean, I'd rather just keep it one fight at a time, but I would like to stay active, you know? I feel like that double booking puts a little pressure on you. It's like, well, now I have to win to fight this next fight, you know? Like, I can't mess this up.
Sure.
I I love it. I love it. It gets people talking and gets a conversation going, and it creates a to me, this is actually Dana being, for me, in my opinion, this is Dana being actually a very good promoter, and he's pushing storylines, and now we're talking about an unranked welterweight, you know, when it's really hard for guys to kind of break through with all these fights and all these names out there. So I'm all for it.
Let's just refer to Gerald Mirchart as the mandatory, like in boxing.
Yeah. And I love Gerald Mirchart. I think it's going to be a fun fight.
I like that fight.
It gave it a story.
Yeah, it's actually competitive.
Yeah, I mean, this could have just been a fight on a card, but now because of this double booking thing, now like, ooh, you know what? I don't know. To me, like as a fan, I'm paying extra special attention in this fight. So good job as a promoter.
It gives it more excitement.
Yeah. And in the day, it's still just a fight. I mean, you know, they're still going to have to fight regardless of the storylines and what happens after or before. It's like, so, you know, it just raises the stakes. It's fun.
Yeah.
Ooh, let's keep talking about bantamweights right here.
From Takiro Man 91, who wins Archuleta versus Mix for the bantamweight title? This is, of course, for the vacant Bellator title. Kyoji Horiguchi got hurt, so he vacated his belt. Juan Archuleta is fighting Patrick Mix. Is it Bellator 246, 245?
It's the Saturday card, so it's 246.
So it's 246 Saturday card. Brian, not your promotion, but your weight class. You paying attention to bantamweight title fights outside the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, I don't watch like crazy amount of Bellator, but I know these two fighters, and I think this is a great like even matchup. I think you know, Archuleta is definitely Mix's hardest fight so far that he's faced, and Mix has showed like a really dominant style on the ground, you know, submitting guys over and over. So I'm interested to see, because Archuleta is like, he's a very like jittery guy, like he's very active, he throws a lot of volume. He's a great wrestler. He's hard to hold. I feel like to hold down and out position. So I'm interested to see how Mix deals with Archuleta as an opponent.
Casey, what are you've interviewed Patchy Mix a few times. You've seen him fight a bunch. Well, what do you mean?
I've interviewed both these gentlemen. No, I just think this is an awesome fight. I think
it's also a fight to make.
Yeah, and it's absolutely a fight to make, and it sets up whoever wins this is going to be fighting Sergio Pettis for they'll be defending against Sergio Pettis on their next fight. So no, I mean, I just think like I've said before, I think worldwide, the men's bantamweight division now is as hot as it's ever been. I just think there's so much talent, including Mr. Kelleher right here in the 35 division, the men's 35 division right now in the world. I just think it's great. And this is from UFC, Bellator, to in Japan, and Japanese promotions. There's just so many great 135ers, and Archuleta and Mix are just two more of them. And I'm super hyped for this fight.
Selfishly, I want Sergio Pettis to fight Gallagher, see how good Gallagher is. And then if Gallagher and then the winner of that fight can fight the winner of Archuleta Mix, because if Gallagher beats Pettis, I think that silences almost every critic. And then I don't think you could even argue that he doesn't deserve a title shot, but that's probably not going to happen in the middle of a pandemic. But any of those guys. Yeah, but I agree with you. Bantamweight rules and across all promotions.
I just love it.
Patrick Mix also, every time I interview him, seems to have a like he always has a chip on his shoulder. Like that man is never not disrespected. And then Juan Archuleta he fights all the way up at 155 too. Yeah. Like I think he's the three division weight class on like the regional circuit.
Yeah.
At one point, we interviewed him before he fought Pitbull. He's like, I'm gonna beat Pitbull, then I'm gonna go up and beat Pitbull again for 155, and then I'll drop back down and fight 135. He wanted to be the first three division champ.
Yeah, and I think it's like, I think Archuleta is better at 45. I don't know how I'm curious. At 35, I think he's very good, but I just don't think he's as good as when he's at 45. But we'll see. I'm very excited. Let's keep it with bantamweights.
In your option, in your opinion, is Shane O'Malley a sore loser? So, in your opinion, is Sean O'Malley a sore loser? I assume this question is for Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I don't like the way he handles the loss. You know, I think kind of, you know, still putting Chito down and stuff, not really accepting it. But I do think that business-wise, like he's kind of doing this on purpose. I don't know if he's getting, you know, information from other guys that have done this in the past. But, you know, you make people – you have people that love you. You make people hate you. And you kind of have all areas covered as far as fan base goes and people that want to see you fight, whether they want to see you win or lose. So I think O'Malley's kind of playing that role where he's like, all right, like I'm going to make you hate me. Like I'm just going to keep being brash and cocky and, you know, I'm still undefeated. So F you and I'm going to keep being me type of thing. So I don't blame him for doing that, but I like to see like a little bit more humble honesty when it comes to like real true answers, you know, for facing defeat.
Hey man, haven't you heard? Chael Sonnen's been undefeated for 15 years.
That's who I think he's getting it from, to be honest. I think Chael's giving him some advice or something under the table.
Who do you think they should match Sean O'Malley up with next, coming off his first loss?
I mean, I wouldn't think that I would be a bad matchup, you know, for them to do now. I think it makes pretty good sense. But I thought, you know, I said this before, like a lot of the want and desire to fight him was, you know, to take that to be the first guy to beat him and steal the hype and everything. And like Marlon Vera kind of just did that. So it's like, it doesn't have as much steam to me as it did, but I would still do it. You know, it's always a big fight, I feel like, with a guy with that big of a following. I'm not sure, you know, I think they're going to go a safer route with him and give him a very, very winnable fight again and then go from there.
Casey, what do you think? I know we talked about
that safer route. I'm saying that safer route is not Brian Kelleher. That's all I know.
I want him to fight Dodson. That's why, because I thought the winner of Merab and Dodson and the winner of Sean O'Malley Cheeto would probably fight, and then the losers would fight each other. But
a weird fight, right? Dodson versus O'Malley, the way their bodies are.
Yeah, that's as close as we can get to a circus. Hard for us to find
faster. Right. And you'd be hard pressed to find a faster bantamweight or just fighter in general than John Dodson. That man has like a ball of energy, hits hard, doesn't really grapple as much. I think it'd be a fight that Sean could win. And then Chito Merab is a fun fight, but I think Chito said he wants to fight Jimmy Rivera next, which is also an awesome fight. Like, again, bantamweight just rules.
Brian, this maybe it's an obvious question. Maybe this is kind of a controversial question, but do you consider Cheeto's win over O'Malley a clean victory, like a legit victory? Or a fluke win, you know?
I mean, like, that's the thing is I feel like this whole circumstance gave O'Malley that out, you know, to be like, oh, you know, I fell, my ankle, something was hurt. Like, that's why you won. And I was beating you before that and this and that. I mean, fights are always like that. Like, some guy's winning and then he loses. And sometimes you get caught by something and it's a legit combination the guy threw and he got you. So I think, you know, I think Chito is being patient. And, you know, he got leg kicked himself really hard. But then when he leg kicked O'Malley, it kind of put him down. It hurt him enough to put him down and not be able to stay on his leg. And then, you know, the ground and pound was pretty vicious too. He landed that big elbow and finished him off. And I think he kind of flash knocked him out with one of those elbows. So, you know, you don't really hear O'Malley saying that, like, oh yeah, you know, that elbow hurt me, or like, you know, that did put me out and I couldn't continue. So yeah, I thought it was legit. You know, I thought he hurt him and he finished up and he did a good job.
You ever been kicked where your leg goes numb?
No, I've been calf kicked a lot though in my career. I feel like a lot of guys kind of saw that as an available tactic against me because I wasn't checking a lot of kicks. But I got like meaty thighs and like leg kicks don't hurt me too bad, but those calf kicks, they add up. And I've never had it where I couldn't, you know, move or stay, you know, durable. But I don't really know what that feels like when it hits the nerve and it just shuts you down. I know that it hurts though, for sure.
Casey, you ever been kicked in the leg and your leg falls apart?
Not to the point where like it's collapsed, but like I've got kicked in the calf where like you can tell, oh, if that was a little harder, that would have really sucked. You know, so definitely you go numb. I found it where you kind of, you feel it can kind of start going numb. So I can imagine if, you know, and I've never been calf kicked with no shin pads either. So obviously, yeah, that would suck even much worse.
Also, this isn't the first time Sean O'Malley's had leg injuries or foot injuries in a fight. So maybe Chito just saw that opening. He knew that would be there.
He could just be one of those guys that's like injury prone. He's kind of a little fragile in certain areas. And that would be a shame too if the guy just fell apart this young in his career, you know?
Yeah. Everyone had like Floyd Mayweather breaks his hands every single fight. It's just how his body is. Maybe his legs just fall apart every fight.
Maybe Sean O'Malley being that tall and that, you know, long and, you know, lanky for bantamweight, that's going to have repercussions, you know? It's just like, so hopefully it was just a weird kick. And I regardless of my opinion of Sean O'Malley, like personally, I love him as a fighter and I love what he brings to the sport. And I hope he gets healthy. And that would suck. Those type of career type injuries to any fighter. That just,
well, that was the thing too. Like after the fight, he was like, he put himself up on camera dancing and all that stuff. Like, no, I'm not even hurt. I just, you know, I just faked that whole thing and whatever. I'm still undefeated. I think people were just like, wait a second, what the hell is going on here? Are you even injured or?
I was joking. I was like, that would be like DC after he lost to Stipe the next day, like him going to like an archery, like, hey, look at me. I'm like nailing this. This is easy. My eye's fine, you know? Like, man,
that was great.
Like what an asshole, but like, what an awesome asshole. What a troll. Are Brian, like, as a prize fighter, and you know, it's, you know how the game works. Are you willing to ever, like, just basically not be yourself or be like just in a really exaggeration of yourself just to get your name out there more? Or maybe you are right now. I don't know. but you know what I mean? Like,
no, you know, I know what you're saying. Like, you definitely have to know how to be on camera. You know, I definitely, you kind of elevate yourself a little bit on camera. It's not like who I am every day, just talking to like my girlfriend or like my mom or something. But I don't go to that point where like I'm doing like a shtick and I feel fake. You know, I'm just truly trying to be myself. It's hard to lie for me. Like personally, it's just hard to like go on a fake shtick and start lying and saying stupid stuff. But you know, like if you do that, you can get headlines and get a lot of popularity from it. So I think guys take full advantage of that. I don't blame them at all. It's just, to me, I'd rather try to stay myself, you know?
Yeah. It's
You and Cody Stamen, well, Cody Stamen said he didn't really like you much before you guys fought.
Yeah, but then after, he liked me.
Yeah, he said that. He's like, I hated Brian Keller. And then we fought, and then we hugged after, and I liked him.
See, it's even better. I gained his respect.
There you go.
What? Wait. Cody didn't like you? What's going on, man? Like, who doesn't like you?
I talked a little trash, you know, like beforehand, but so did he. We were kind of going back and forth.
Here's what happened. You were looking for a fight. You were on Twitter after your fight in January, like trying to get a fight on one of the Jacksonville cards. And Cody responded to you, but you had just accepted the fight against Hunter. Day. So he responded probably like 20 minutes late. And you said, hey, I just is like, you're a little late. I'll guillotine you next.
Yeah. Or something
like that. And he was like, you're going to guillotine me? And he got all angry about it.
Yeah, he gets this chip on his shoulder. He has an attitude to him, you know? But I mean, me and him, like we fought. It was like a hard, good fight. It was a really good fight. And then, you know, with his brother and everything, it kind of just naturally happened. We gained respect for each other. And, you know, that was that. So he congratulated me on my last win. So.
He just wanted to,
He is like when he fought, like he hates Rob Font. Like when you ask him about Rob Font, he just gets so agitated. And like you've interviewed Rob Font, like Rob Font is a likable guy. Like he brings his dogs to media days and everything. And for whatever reason, Cody just hates him. Anyway,
what's that noise?
I don't know.
You're like in a jet. You're like in an airplane hangar.
It's Rhode Island, man. Anything happens.
Hey, what's the official appetizer of Rhode Island?
Calamari, man. We've been over this enough times.
Did you know this, Brian?
Calamari. There's like a, you know what's a good one? Buffalo calamari I've had. They have like some buffalo sauce on there. It's amazing.
Yeah, and the fish, Rhode Island, I think, has the biggest squid fishing fleet in the country. So for whatever reason, our official state appetizer is calamari.
All right.
Yeah. Now Muffy, you know. Milk and calamari. Dell's lemonade. Those are the holy trinity.
All right, here we go. Here's the big one. Here's the big one.
Nick Diaz comeback. Wolf ticket? From longtime commenter Trumbo. Brian, you excited for Nick Diaz's potential comeback to MMA?
I'm excited, because someone tell me what the wolf tickets actually means. I get what they're saying, but what's wolf have to do with it? Like, I know they're trying to say like he's selling you fake information, right?
I think it has something to do with Little Red Riding Hood when the wolf is trying to pass off as the grandmother. Oh. You know how he's right. Like, come on the ground, and it's just like, and then you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay. Well, either way, I saw the video with Nick Diaz. He looks in good shape. It was a little weird though, right? Didn't he look like kind of, he almost looked like drunk, even though he was like in good shape and cutting weight. He's like kind of like flimsy and like moving weird with his hands. I don't know if he actually cut weight and that's why, but I think what brings me the most excitement is if he was to fight Masvidal at some point and kind of get that brother Richin story. I think that would be cool. That's about it. You know, otherwise I don't know who else they would book him against right now, but
Robbie Law.
Lawler, yeah, that's another one.
I've been waiting. I've been asking for the rematch between Nick Diaz and Robbie Lawler for like 15 years.
But Lawler's like, gotta start letting those hands go again, you know, if that's the case.
You're not wrong. That first fight to me, like Casey talked about it when it was like that weird punch that knocked Lawler dead.
Yeah.
I can't remember who the ref was, but Nick was like, it was like peak Nick talking. He was talking so much greasiness during the fight that the ref had to be like, stop it, like in the middle of the fight. So to me, I've been waiting for that. I don't think they'll ever do it because Nick Diaz said he'll never want to fight Robbie Lawler again. He goes, you think I want to get punched by Robbie Lawler? It's not a good time. So yeah.
When that fight happened. Like that's how long ago that fight was. Still,
and his tattoo still isn't done from that fight.
Oh, but back talking about wolf tickets. Little history lesson. People say wolf tickets, like the animal wolf. It's actually wolf tickets, like a wolf, wolf. And the idea is it's a bark. Like you're like, come on, let's fight, let's bring it. And then, you know, you don't have anything to sell. That's what the term is. Actually wolf tickets.
So it's like all bark, no bite. Like
essentially,
that.
Yeah. So when you're selling, you're selling like, oh, we're gonna fight. Here, pay a ticket. And then you go behind the curtain and everyone's just like, yeah, we're just gonna, you know. So that's where the term comes from.
This sounds like a good t-shirt, wolf tickets.
Yeah. And then, and then Nick Diaz brought it back into the MMA lexicon.
But maybe the COVID thing saved the guy, you know, because he was in the clubs getting wasted every damn day, and now it's like you don't really have that opportunity. So maybe it kind of set him back in line, and he's back in the gym being consistent with that. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think.
I wouldn't hate the Anderson Silva rematch either if Anderson wants to go out on a big name, because that fight's a no contest now. There you go.
Yeah.
Imagine it's a UFC. They send out a little just a little press release that says Jorge Masvidal versus Diaz. And it was like, oh, they booked a rematch. And then they have a press conference, but no, it's Nick Diaz that walks out.
Yes. Surprise, surprise.
I mean, I don't think that's fair for Nick Diaz to come back after like what, 4 years out to face Jorge Masvidal, but just for entertainment sakes, I think it'd be freaking awesome.
Nick hasn't won in 10 years. That's crazy to me.
He's won more recently than Brock Lesnar has.
That's very true.
Well, that'd be crazy, too, because if they made Nick Diaz, Masvidal, and then Connor Nate trilogy, like those guys are making out big. They could just get out right after that, split the money, and they're all set.
Yeah, but Brian, you're making sense.
Yeah.
That's get out of here. Get out of here.
It's a fight game, right?
Like the trilogy between Connor and Nate should have been booked the second fight ended. Like that was like the peak MMA popularity in my mind. Like that second, like Kanye West like was there at the time. And then whoever J-Lo was dating, they broke up because he chose to go to the fight instead of hang out with her. Like, that's how big that fight was. Like, Tom Brady, Leo, Mark Wahlberg was there. They should have booked that trilogy fight ASAP, but say la vie.
Me and Jose had a very tender moment watching Connor versus first Nate one. The first one. Yeah.
Before we ever met, they put the media in the auxiliary seating in the old MGM Grand, where because there's too much media, you don't get to sit in the press row. You sit like in with the fans. Yeah. But it's like sectioned off area. And me and Casey had never really interacted, but we happened to sit next to each other for Diaz McGregor one. We're just like shaking each other, like beard falling on us, like
that's
stuff.
That's the way to meet, man, right there.
And like, we were like, Jose, Casey.
Yeah. How you doing, sir? How are you, a future coworker?
Like after it all, you introduce each other to you. Like, oh, by the way, Jose.
I'm glad we experienced that 7 minutes of fighting together.
Yeah. But you've been like that. You've been like a crazy concert or something. You're just like whoever's next to you, or you know, at a sports bar, your team wins, and it's just like all of a sudden the stranger next to you is your best friend. You know, that's what it was like.
Start high fiving.
Yeah, just start high fiving randos.
When we went to Double or Nothing, Casey, the AEW, the first, the big pay for the wrestling show, whoever was sitting behind me and him did not see eye to eye on wrestlers. And we were just like, F you, no, F you. And then after all the matches, you're like, hey, man, it's just wrestling.
It's just wrestling.
It's just wrestling. It's not even real.
Just shook hands and parted ways.
Brian, who gave you those balloons in the background?
I know, you know what? I noticed them I keep thinking someone
pops up in front of you, but I realize it's
I noticed them like a minute in, and I got embarrassed as hell that those balloons were floating behind me. And then I was like, please don't notice them, and now it finally came up. But yeah, those were for my birthday. August 19th, my girlfriend let these balloons out in here, and I just left them. I'm letting them pass away natural, you know.
It's taking a while.
Yeah, one of them over there is like a little dead. Yeah. See it, right? Yeah, this guy.
Is that so
resilience?
Was your birthday?
There he goes.
So your birthday was during your fight camp, right?
Yeah. But you know, like, I'm so used to this that, like, yeah, I'm not even like I don't care that I can't eat cake and all this stuff. I'm so used to it at this point.
Have you had any cake since the victory?
Oh, I've had it all. I've had everything, man. I'm like worried too. I'm like worried about getting back down to bantamweight, you know, because like my body's changed over this course of time with the quarantine and the whole first couple of months of not training like properly. And then now, you know, there's a couple more guys and it's a little better with sparring and everything like that. But like my body adjusted in a weird way where like I'm just like thicker naturally. And like I can't get under 155. Like it's so hard no matter what I do.
Oh no.
Yeah, and that's 20 pounds over still. So I'm like, I gotta make some adjustments.
Ah, oh, that's no fun. Being a fighter sucks.
Being a fighter,
stay in school, kids.
Yeah. Hey, as long as this COVID's going on, I'm just gonna keep saying, hey, 145, let's do 145. Forget about it. I think these other bantamweights are cool with it too, so it kind of works out.
Yeah.
I wish During this whole pandemic too, that I wish the UFC, outside of title fights, maybe the occasional number one contender fight, I feel like almost all fights, especially the lower weight classes, should be one weight class up. And just, I think we're in unprecedented times, and I think with limited training facilities, I think, you know, you guys should be granted that. But who am I?
Any more questions, Casey? No, we hit the
yes,
two.
Sir. Where is it? Sorry. Fly through these last ones. Wait.
From the Seaside on Twitter, is Lie Them Up just a tweet or an actual call out? To put this into context, who was it? Someone tweeted a photo of the Diaz brothers, and Conor McGregor responded with Line Them Up. So what do you guys think? Is that a call out or is that just Conor being Conor?
That is Conor staying relevant.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's all that.
All the replies were screenshots of the tweet. They were all like, he's going to delete it. He's going to delete it. Just screenshot it now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's just, like he said, he's staying relevant. Like, like Dana keeps saying he's retired, and it's weird, though. It's like, is he out of the testing pool or no? You know, like, you never really know the truth.
Yeah, it's and it worked. Staying relevant, and here we are. There's 10,000 fights happening this weekend. Mr. Kelleher's here right now. I don't know, UFC signed 50,000 more Contender Series guys, and yet we're still talking about Conor McGregor and Nick Diaz. So whatever they're doing, we're still talking about it, so we're the suckers.
I think what he means by line them up is get all the top fighters in the world, all the most, you know, highest paid fighters, and start a union.
That is not where I thought that was going. That's hilarious.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, I was wrong. Mr. Kelleher is 100% correct.
That's funny. Wow. Was not expecting that one.
Oh man.
Get on. Any more, Casey?
Did we already answer this one? I think.
Well, we pretty much have someone out.
Got enough of this.
Fans of Mr. Stationery, though, with the crystal in the comment, though, so I got to give him a shout out.
Yes. Here we go.
MMG2K20 on Twitter. Is it fair that some number one contender fights are 3 rounds and others are 5? It's crazy to think that had Amanda Nunes' first fight with Valentina been a 5-round main event, she could have easily lost and not had her recent success. Should all non-title fights be 3 rounds? Brian, what do you think as a fighter? I've asked this question to a lot of fighters. It seems pretty 50-50. Would you like to see number one contender fights be 5 rounds like title fights?
I mean, I don't think it's the most important thing for the fans, but like for the fighters themselves, it would be nice to kind of get that test run. Like, hey, I'm ready for 5 rounds. You know, I've done it before. Now I'm about to go fight for a title. I think it's only a positive thing for the fighters because if you haven't done 5 rounds, it's definitely different. You know, going in there, those extra 2 rounds when you're already so tired and you got to still perform. So I think it's good for those people that are getting ready to challenge for titles. Why not?
Casey?
Well, I think this is a question for a prize fighter. I mean, as a fan watching, of course I want to, as a selfish fan watching, of course I want to see more my favorite fighters at the highest level fight for longer periods of time. I want to see more of it. But for Brian, though, because you're the one actually having to do it, do you, as a prize fighter, do you want to get paid more? There you go. You saw it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think fans understand the physical commitment and the time commitment it takes to get ready for a 5-round fight against another A-level athlete.
Well, that's the thing, right? It only makes sense to get paid a little bit more to do that, to have to fight 2 extra rounds, you know, we don't get paid by the hour necessarily, but like you hear a lot of guys say that, like, hey, if I'm gonna do a, you know, main event fighters, usually they get a little bit better of a deal. They can negotiate, like, listen, I'm fighting 5 rounds now, not 3 rounds. So, you know, maybe they can get a little bump in pay for that in the contract. So yeah, I think it makes sense to do that. You know, I think the fighters deserve it, and it's a way to kind of negotiate and work your way up in the company.
Line them up.
I think if it's a number one contender fight, it's deserving enough to be a main event anyway, in some most cases, especially for a fight night. So why not make a main event?
Man, there's certain fights, like when I think of if they eventually do book Frankie Edgar versus Dominic Cruz. Man, I hope that's 5 rounds, no matter where it is.
It has to. 100%.
Like, if that fight was 3 rounds, that would just be a disappointment. Because I think, I don't know. What do you think about that potential matchup, Brian?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, and when matchups like that are just neck and neck, and there's a lot of movement going on and like high level technique, like you just want to see more of it, you know. Like, and sometimes you don't know, you know. So it just feels like a fight is not finished after 3 rounds sometimes, and I feel like that's one of those matchups where you're like, I gotta see more of this. Like this wasn't enough. So yeah, I think stylistically that matchup's amazing. There's Dominic Cruz's movement and Frankie's boxing and wrestling, and like you just don't really know what would happen in that fight. It's just kind of chaotic, so I'm excited to see that. I hope it happens.
It's like when Izzy fought Anderson Silva, I felt like we should have had 2 more rounds, and then same thing for like when Robert Whittaker fought Darren Till. I thought it was perfect, like 5 rounds. Like if that ended after 3 rounds of them just like faking each other out, I would have felt like we needed 2 more. But then I, in my mind, when Shogun fought Dan Henderson the first time, that was like one of the first main events to be 5 rounds. That's a non-title fight. And going into the fourth round, like Dan Henderson was holding up two fingers. He's like, you got two more. We got two more now.
Yeah.
So that sticks out in my mind. So you get those epic. Like, imagine if Dan Henderson Shogun 1 was only three rounds and we just were just robbed of one of the greatest fights of all time.
The two greatest fights of that year were the same night, too, remember?
Yep. Eddie Alvarez, Michael Chandler won.
Yep.
We also had Vanderlei, I think, fought Kung Lee on that same night, and Uriah Faber fought Brian Bolles. So that was just like an epic night of fights all around. I think Ryan Bader knocked out Jason Brills, maybe. I can't remember.
Good old Ryan Bader. Cool. All right, well, we're at an hour and 5 minutes, sir.
Well, Brian, you know the drill. You're, I think, one of the most tenured guests of the A-Side live chat. Casey has his crystals. Which crystal is that, by the way, Casey?
Fluorite, I think. These are from the good people at what was the name of the Crystal Council? Crystal Council, yeah.
Yeah, they sent me a hat. They sent me a box and everything.
Yeah. So I got this. I'm wearing the bracelet. This is
just our crystals. They're sending them to everybody.
Well, all right. They're sending the people who know what's up. Not everybody. Yeah. Who matter? Yeah. Jeez.
Did Pizza get one?
Maybe due to international shipping. He might not got one. Got my quartz. Huh?
I could get one of those. That's awesome. Man, anyway, Brian, you know the drill. You can cut a promo whenever you want. You can talk about why the Islanders are going to lose to the Lightning.
Can I curse?
Yeah, you can.
Oh, yeah, please.
If you want, if it's about hockey, go on.
Well, first comes first. Let's go Islanders. I'm a little bit worried, to be honest, after that first game. Seemed a little bit outclassed, but I'll be tuning in tonight and cheering for them. Get your crystals, get your tiger's eye, get your weed, get it all, and go to school, kids. Don't follow your dreams.
There you go. That's how you cut a promo, folks. I can't even talk. The Bruins have been out of the playoffs for far too long. So hockey season's over. Baseball season, cancel it. Bring on football. Still got the Celtics. Casey, what do you got to say?
I'm just absorbing. I'm absorbing the energy here. I don't have anything to say. Just soaking it all in.
Good gosh.
Is that how it works? I was gonna wear this around my neck. Looks good.
That's a heavy one.
Yeah. Oh, did you get the big dinosaur egg, Brian?
Yes, that heavy, oval shaped one. I was shocked by how heavy that was.
Mine looks worse. Like, Casey's looks awesome. Look how cool Casey looks with, the stripe and everything.
Yeah, yours looks cooler than mine.
Oh, God.
Mine just looks.
Look at this thing. This is a good 35, 40 pounds. This is.
It's like, what do you do with it? You know, you just let it sit there.
I just stare at it all day.
Just soaks it up.
Yeah. Oh, so heavy. I'm just going to hold it.
Anyway, we'll wrap up this episode of the A-Side. Brian will 100% be back, hopefully, after his next big win. Maybe another big bonus. Hopefully, yes, before 2020 ends. But for Jose, that's Casey, that's Brian. This will be up on Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Google, YouTube, iHeartRadio. We're on iHeartRadio now, guys, so go check it all out. So, but for Jose, that's Casey, that's Brian. We'll be back next Wednesday. We're out.
Do not follow your dreams.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.